Sunday.
It's Sunday morning.
I love mornings.
The games are over, and we're breaking it all down. This is your Morning After podcast, with all the insight and analysis on the Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. The Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole begins right now.
And he gave us an opportunity to come in here and show what we're made of.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome in. It's another edition, the regular season finale edition of the Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole. Good Sunday morning. It's a bittersweet Sunday morning because, gentlemen, the regular season is over. And for one of these teams, the official season is over. As BYU ends the year with five consecutive losses, Hans, after starting 5-2, you were there in Stillwater. And boy, these back-to-back weeks, it felt like there were so many opportunities for BYU to get W's, to get that elusive sixth win, and just couldn't get it done down the stretch. Yesterday, a real kick to the nether regions, a loss in double overtime.
Oh, it was such a brutal kick to the nether regions. So imagine being Isaac Rex.
Oh.
So you're in double overtime. You have an opportunity to win it because Oklahoma State had the ball first in double overtime. They scored, but you stopped them on the two-point conversion. So you're thinking, all right, score, get the two-point conversion, end this thing, get out of Oklahoma State with a win, head to a bowl game, get extra weeks of preparation. Well, they had driven the last couple of series. They had driven and found the end zone and were doing well. And Isaac Rex runs a drag route off the right side, comes all the way across, catches the ball on the opposite numbers. And the defender comes up, grabs him, pulls the arm down. He would have been tackled for probably a 7-yard gain. It would have been 3rd and 1 about. And the defender just rakes the ball out. It hits the turf. Oklahoma State recovers, and it's game over. It was such a tough way to lose that game for this entire team. I'm sick for Isaac Rex. I'm sick for this team because, like you mentioned, they played their butt off over the last couple of weeks.
Lloyd, I know that the Utah game is over, so you had a chance to watch this as well. It just felt like that. All right, so you give up the touchdown and then you block the extra point. And so I'm thinking, all right, you know what? Jake Retzlaff, let's see what you got, man. It hadn't gone well. I think he was like 8 of 23 or 8 of 24 passing up until that point. And you know what? The kid got it done. I mean, he gets them down into field goal range. They're able to. And by the way, the best transfer on this team might be the kicker, because in the rain and the wind and all that. And he, that thing, Hans, would have been good in arena football. That thing split the upright so well. And and then in overtime, you know, he's dealing in overtime too. And it's just such a heartbreaker to lose that way.
Yeah, this one was tough to see, you know, the way they battled in this one. And you know, I was seeing how, you know, they had a good first half and just kind of, you know, things kind of left them in that second half. And it kind of reminded me of that Utah Washington game where all of a sudden the offense, it just disappeared. You used up your powder in the first half, and then all of a sudden there was nothing left. But this team, they battled. For them to go out, you know, in that overtime and score right out of the gates, and you thought, okay, maybe, you know, sure, they let this team back in it, but maybe they can pull this game off. And it just, it just came up short. It was just kind of, it was a bummer deal. Seeing, you know, Isaac Rex come off the field after fumbling that ball away and just, you know, you could see that the emotion. I mean, I know the video we saw on KSL Sports. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw that video and seeing the tears and the raw emotion, as I tweeted out, you know, just, it's like these guys play all season long. They're you know, putting their hearts into everything, you know, the amount of work that goes in, and you guys, you know, Hans, you can talk on this about what goes into a full season, you know, and it's like, and to have it just come to an end, because you're hoping to have one more game with your mm-hmm. brothers, and that's just, I mean, that's tough to see it go out like that.
Mm. And it really was for these guys. And man, that first half was so good, guys.
Yeah.
The first half was really good. Pick six from Eddie Heckard. Eddie Heckard ended up with two interceptions in this game. That gave him five interceptions on the year. Eddie Heckard scored two defensive touchdowns through the year for BYU. He was so good, and he's done. He's on his way to the NFL now, and that's going to be a bad loss for BYU, but I felt like they gave themselves many, many chances to win this game. And I was optimistic and feeling good that they could come out of that with a win and extend the season and probably help ease the pain for this coaching staff, because, you know, those three games, Texas, West Virginia, and Iowa State, put such a bad taste in people's mouths. And this would have gone a long way to just calm down the masses, and now the loss happens, and you got to make some really tough decisions. And I'm sure Kalani's got some really tough decisions in front of him that he has to make now. That maybe a win and a bowl game win, maybe it holds those changes off. But I'm sure that has to make some pretty difficult decisions.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, that I'm really kind of struggling with too, because now I know Kyle was swapping out offensive coordinators like he was underwear there for the first few years in the Pac-12, but I also think that I think you got to be careful about being too overreactionary your first year in a P5 conference. Like, I get it. Like, I know the barbarians at the gate. They've got the torches. They got the pitchforks. Everybody's cranky. Everybody's upset. I get all that. And you're not wrong. Like, I think BYU fans have every right to be upset, especially when you had five opportunities to get that sixth win and you couldn't do it. And really, you lost six out of your last seven games if you back it up a couple weeks. So I understand all the frustrations. I get it. Like, I had BYU win in seven, maybe eight games this year. But I also think it's a cold, hard reality to play this level of football. And you can say, oh, you know, a few years ago we got a bunch of wins against the Pac-12 and all this stuff. And I get all that too. But to do it week in and week out, and the drain and the effort that it takes out of your team is just really hard to calculate unless you're in it. So I just worry that you're going to make choices that shouldn't be made right now in the heat of the moment, when you need to take a step back and say, maybe we have the right coaches in place, maybe we have the right plan in place, but yet it's just, we just got to grow this thing. We got to recruit a little bit better. We got to get better depth. And it took Utah 3-4 years to get to that point. Why should we expect BYU to be ahead of where Utah was going into the Pac-12?
Yeah, and you better, by the way, you better make sure you're making, if you're going to pull the trigger on something like that, you better make sure you're making, it's going to make you better. You're not pulling it, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm just throwing this out there. You're not going with like a Dave Christensen just to go with a Dave Christensen. Like, you better make sure whatever move it is, and I'm not talking about just, you know, a move on the offensive side. I'm just saying, if you make a move, you better know it's going to make you better. Don't just make moves to make moves.
Yeah, that's a good point, Lloyd. Like, have somebody in mind that you
right.
really think is going to be a big step up. And I like your point, Scotty. I think it would be a really good idea to step away for a while and take a good hard look at it, because you're going to have a lot of coaches come open over the next couple weeks, and you could see what comes open and what's available. And look, if you sit down and you start analyzing the film, and as analyzing each coaching performance and say, hey, look, it was where it needed to be. Our personnel was down, or we dealt with so many injuries at that position. You know, because these coaches across the board, they deal with things that we don't know about. They deal with players that had bad grades, or players that jacked up a leg, or players that had personal issues and needed to return home. They deal with so many things. And sometimes we do get caught in the moment and we're like, oh, no, he just did a bad job coaching. And it's, no, there's a lot of reasons why it wasn't good. So take a step back. Take a good hard look at everybody's coaching performance. Make sure everybody was invested. Everybody was laser focused. Everybody put in the work that they were supposed to do. And if they didn't, then you take a look and say, all right, well, I think we could get better here. But to Lloyd's point, yeah, don't do it just to do it. Because the Dave Christensen was a good poll. That was a really rough season with Dave Christensen at the helm.
So this is a tough time for BYU. They'll obviously really emphasize recruiting, but just how much of a loss is it, Hans, to miss out on those 2 to 3 weeks that you would have had to prepare for a bowl game that you can still work with guys? We hear Kalani say it all the time. Kyle says it all the time. Is that just coach speak, or is that really a lost opportunity for the continued development of this team?
Well, I think it's a gigantic lost opportunity because there's so many young guys, and there's guys that still have a couple of years of eligibility that are trying to build as teammates. You know, a guy like Ace Kafusi on the defensive side, he had a great day against Oklahoma State. And it's like, man, how good would it be to see Ace Kafusi a few more times? You've got young defensive ends that you could get in there, get them some rotation, because that's a spot that BYU's got to really take a huge step forward in. I personally think it's a gigantic miss for BYU. Jake Retzlaff struggled. He really struggled, especially in the second half, but he struggled pretty much all game with his accuracy. And if that's another few weeks to work on his accuracy and another game to give him an opportunity to show some accuracy, I think it's big, Scotty. I do. I think it's really big. And I got to tell you guys, so I did a post-game interview with Kalani. He was so good, so open. And I was speaking specifically about Tyler Batty, because Tyler Batty, technically, he's got another year of eligibility. And we asked Tyler Batty in the postgame, so are you out? And he's like, no, I got to sit down and take a good hard look at this. So I asked Kalani, I said, so what do you do, you know, with these guys that have an extra year of eligibility? Because there's a few of them, you know, Aiden Robbins and Tyler Batty. And, you know, there's a list, probably 4 or 5 guys, Isaac Rex. And I said, do you try to get a collective and try to fight off the NFL or convince them? And he said, look, the only guys I want here are the guys that want to be here. And he basically was saying, I don't want to hear about collectives or NILs. If these guys want to just leave to go make money, go make money. I just need guys that want to be here. And he brought up Oklahoma State as the example. And he said, look at Oklahoma State. Look how many guys left Oklahoma State. Now, they picked up one in the portal in Caleb Etienne. So, you know, they felt like their loss was their gain. But he essentially said, Gundy told people to leave. And he said, only stay if you want to stay. But we're not going to sit here and sugarcoat and powder your little baby bottoms. You've got to make a decision. And look, guys, they're back in the Big 12 championship. How many guys left that program? And they had guys that wanted to stay, and they ran with those guys, and they're in the Big 12 championship game. So I thought it was a really good point by Kalani. Like, if you don't want to be here, just leave. Like, if Cody Epps pulled that same prank this year, I'd just be like, just go, man. Just go find something that makes you happy. And I would find a receiver that wants to be in there cranking.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting conversation that Kalani's got to have with a lot of players out there, and then also some hard conversations with some guys that he needs to say, hey, look, you know what? This probably isn't the place for you. You're not going to get the time. You're not going to get the snaps, and maybe you need to go find some playing time elsewhere. These next few weeks, Lloyd, it's that being said season coming up, and I'm sure the tweets are going to be flying out, and it's coming. They're going to be coming, and that portal's open up December 4th, and BYU's going to try to improve and also try to improve the roster by acquiring people and then also improving the roster by telling some people that maybe this Big 12 thing really isn't for you. All right, let's shift gears. Let's talk Utah. Lloyd, you had the pre and post on this one. You know, we saw the reports coming out from Rice-Eccles Stadium that they were down at quarterback and down a big way. And what I mean today, I think, really encapsulates is, you know, really what this whole season was about for the University of Utah. When you trot out a guy at quarterback and everybody's looking at their roster going, wait, who is this guy? It felt like that opening scene of Major League when those guys are sitting around the restaurant like, who are these guys? Like, who is this dude? When did you know what were your thoughts when he trots out at quarterback?
Yeah, I'm thinking, okay, today is going to be this whole team is going to be tested, and I mean Utah has shown that they have a lot of depth, and you just figured, you know what, this team's going to have to come out and probably run the ball, which is where they've had success, and that's exactly what they came out to do. So Luke Batari is, and it sounds like, you know, judging by what Kyle said, they found out that Nate Johnson was going to be transferring on Monday. They found out, so Luke Batari is the guy, and so now Utes are down to their fifth string quarterback, and you know what, they came out with and props to Andy Ludwig. He came out, and this was going to be a game where he's going to have to come out, out chess, Deion Sanders and this Colorado team and pull something, put something together. And they did, they came out and they ran the ball 10 straight times. In fact, if I remember right, I don't believe they even threw a pass until the second quarter. Like, they came out to run the ball. You had Jalen Glover had a hell of a game, his biggest game of his career. He went for 107 yards. You had Jaquindon Jackson went for 68 yards. Sione Vaki, 68 yards, 268 yards total rushing. And that's what it was. At halftime, you had Utah out rushing Colorado, but then you had Colorado out passing Utah, and it seemed like that if that was the way that game was going to go, then it was probably going to favor Utah.
What I mean, no Shedeur Sanders in this one. Obviously, Utah dealing with all the injuries on the defensive side, but you know, look, Colorado's a mess, and they don't have the depth, and you know, they tried to make it a game a little bit, but for the most part,
right?
Where was your concern level at this game? Because it sure felt like, even with all the issues Utah was dealing with, there was no way they were going to lose this game.
Yeah, it didn't. You know, it was interesting at times. You know, an area where Utah kind of struggled was in the secondary a little bit. This Ryan Staub came out, and he actually had some. I mean, he was 17 of 24 for 195 yards. He actually had some decent plays. Probably the biggest play was probably on the first Colorado series. They're actually driving, and you see and Connor O'Toole a strip sack,
yeah.
You know, and I'm going blank on the defensive end. Why am I going blank? Fillinger scoops it up, and you know, and they go drive and they score. Like that was really the difference in the game. And by the way, they got that, you know, the big talk was on Tuesday was about this, that flu bug that I guess was going through the team a little bit. And on Tuesday, Kyle said if the game was going to start today, they would probably be 12 players short, roughly. And it sounded like, you know, some of those players were back in there. You had Karini Reed back. Cole Bishop was back playing. This was his, was was a game that he played, which, by the way, you know, side note, he was asked in the post game whether he was going to return or not. And he said he hadn't made a decision. You had players that gave him, because he didn't walk, obviously. He had players that gave them their lays and stuff like that. So there was actually kind of a feeling that maybe Cole Bishop might be on his way out, possibly. He didn't say he was going to be, but like the voice, the you know, the inflection you got in his voice, the tone, it just seemed like, maybe you know Utes might be without Cole Bishop next year. So but it was definitely a game where you know it's probably closer than it looked. You know,
yeah,
he had a couple field goals from Cole Becker, but really it didn't seem like Utah looked like they were gonna, you know, it seemed like they were gonna pull this one off.
Now, for some reason I thought Cole Bishop was a sophomore, but yeah, he's a junior. He can make the jump. Hans, what do you think the NFL, if you were to grade him out, what do you think he is round-wise?
Very high. I think he's a very good fit for a lot of defensive schemes in the league. I think he has consistency. I know he was out for one game, but he's got all kinds of consistency.
He's stayed pretty healthy, though. Yeah.
Yeah. He's built well. He's got the speed. He's got the mentality. I have not even looked into draft grades for Cole Bishop, but just from my vision and the film, I've got to imagine he's a fourth round look, maybe low end third at the highest and low end fifth at the lowest, but a fourth round pick. Because I think NFL teams are always looking for good, solid, foundational, well-coached talent that can come in and have some production. And everybody knows that Morgan Scalley safeties and safeties out of Whittingham's defense, they are early bloomers, and doesn't take a lot of development to get them up to production level. Cole Bishop's going to be a solid NFL talent.
Yeah. Okay, so let's say you're Cole Bishop's dad. What's the round you need to get back from an NFL scout where you say go? Is it third round? Is it fourth round? I would say third, fourth would be, because if it's fifth or lower, then you could slip out of those rounds pretty easy and be a free agent. So what's the rounds where you feel like, okay, you need to go?
If it's anything below fourth, if they're giving you a high end is your fifth round, then I would look at coming back. I don't know what Cole Bishop's doing in collective or NIL. I don't know if it even matters to Cole Bishop. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe money doesn't matter. But I'd look at it, Scotty, and I think to myself, okay, what more can he do to improve his draft stock? If he came back for another year, like how much more could he actually improve it? He's been so good, so freaking good. I don't know if he can improve it much more. So if it was like a fifth or sixth, if I'm getting anything in the fourth or third rounds, I'm going out, man. I'm going to start my NFL career.
Lloyd, I'm kind of curious. Kyle had an interesting line where he said that Brant Keithy is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because I didn't listen to the sound. I read some tweets. So if I misspoke here, correct me, but he said that he believes that Brant Keithy has made his decision, but he's going to leave that announcement up to Brant. Is that correct?
Yeah. I believe that's essentially what he said. And so I think maybe we'll hear something here soon. Like me and Christian were going back and forth on this, whether he was going to be, back or not. And Christian kind of believes that Brant's probably going to be gone. And we kind of had a little bit of a discussion, like, you know, whether it's like if coming back one more, I mean, I gotta imagine he could improve his stock if he comes back. I just don't know what he's hearing and whether he's hearing, you know, if he's hearing fifth round or something like that, then I think if you're Brent Keithy, you have to come back, especially knowing what's coming back. One thing to note, by the way, and this was before the game, I mean, so Devon Vele did not dress, and I don't know if that was because the flu bug had hit him or what, but he also did not walk. So I don't know what that means for Devon Vele. You very well could see him maybe come back. I know. I don't know. I thought it was a little bit strange that he didn't walk. So what do you think that says, Hans?
That's a tough one.
Give me
the exact scenario again.
About as far as with Devon Vele not walking.
Yeah, no.
So he didn't walk. Like, and I said he didn't dress. So I'm assuming maybe possibly a flu bug. I don't know. Like I said, the flu bug's going through the team a little bit. That was the discussion on Tuesday, but he didn't dress. He did not do the walk. So I don't know what that means for him.
Does that mean anything to you, Scotty? I can't really.
Well, I would think if you're planning on leaving,
right.
you're going to walk. You're going to want that moment with your family. You're going to want that moment with the stadium camera on you and the video board and getting that applause. I mean, that's the way I take away from it. But
he's had a nice. Considering what his quarterbacks have been, you know, this year with Bryson and Nate Johnson, like, and I think he's had like 500 and something, 500 plus yards receiving, 3 or 4 touchdowns. You know, he's had a great season.
Yeah, I would say for him, anyways. But looking at next year and in the Big 12, which is, you know, the defenses aren't quite up to speed. They give up a lot of points. You got Cam Rising coming back. I would say, and again, this is me speculating. I don't know, but I would say he's coming back. But you said, you said Cole Bishop didn't walk either, right?
No, he did not. But players gave him his. But players gave them. He had a couple lays on him in the post game. So players gave them his lay. I don't know if that was, you know, a little bit of symbolism there, you know, or saying goodbye, thank you for your, but he, like I said, he didn't say anything. Like he said he wasn't sure. He hasn't made a decision. He was asked specifically if he was coming back, and he said, I have not made a decision.
Interesting.
So, well, yeah, I mean, this team could come back extremely stacked next year. I mean, they're going to be stacked regardless, even if Cole Bishop, you know, leaves and if Devon Vele leaves. But, I mean, if guys like that come back and decide to make one more run at it, this team could be
scary.
I mean, it'll be scary in the Big 12. It's like they're – I mean, I already thought they were, you know, go in there and be a top three team out of the gates anyways. And it doesn't change anything of them being a top three team. They're just that much better.
Well, put me down for, I think just the tea leaves just looks to me like it would be better for Brent Keithy to be back. I can't get a feel from any other guys, but I think Brent Keithy stands to gain more than he loses by coming back. Especially with Cam Rising coming back. That's his buddy. He has a lot of faith in him. Just put me down early as a Brent Keithy returns guy.
Yeah. It just makes a lot of sense, honestly, to do it. And especially the better that Dalton Kincaid plays and guys that are in the NFL playing that position, coming off the injury and saying, look, you know, if I'm a scout, I'm like, I need another year of film on you. I need to see a healthy playing in a big boy conference again. And let's see what you can do. It just makes a lot of sense, but we'll see how that goes. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about what the Utes need. But I agree with Lloyd. It could be a scary good season for Utah if they get this injury bug behind them. And Hans, you and I have talked about this too. Like, I think every team in the state will do this to a certain extent. You self-scout, you self-evaluate after a year. But if I'm Kyle Whittingham, I'm leaving no stone unturned, and I don't know what the strength and conditioning program looks like. I'm not, and by the way, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not saying that's wrong, but you have to take, and Utah State's got to do this as well. They were decimated with injuries, and BYU with the safety issues and some of the issues they've dealt with. You got to take a long, hard look at what are you doing to prepare athletes for this, you know, strenuous season, because this is unlike anything we've ever seen at the University of Utah. You've got to look and take a deep dive on everything and make sure, okay, sometimes injuries are freak and they just happen. And sometimes you just have a bad year. And if that's the case, you're like, okay, we did everything we could. We've evaluated and we feel like we've got a good staff in place. And it was just a weird year for that to happen. But if not, then you're like, okay, then we've got to evaluate. How are we training these guys? How is our workload in fall? How's our workload throughout the course of the season? Are we pushing these guys too far? Are we not, are we not going hard enough in fall? Are we going too hard in fall? Are we going too hard in the middle of the season? What are we doing? You know, is there different training ways to make sure the body's a little bit more pliable? Like all these little things, you have to take a long, hard, scientific approach on how you can make it through the course of the season, because the way this team is built and could be back next year and some of the talent, you can't have another injury riddled season like this. You can't let another potential incredible, you know, college football playoff like roster go to waste because you can't keep people out on the field.
By the way, Scotty, while you were taking the day off on Friday, we had the Football Fridays going on.
I can't believe you just said that.
While you were enjoying your day off in Albuquerque, you know, and we were there breaking down the X's and O's with Coach Mack and Frank Dolce and Alema Harrington and Hans Olsen and myself.
Sitting around eating burritos. I get it. All right. That's fine.
Well, Coach Mack, and correct me if I'm wrong, Hans, between Coach Mack's, years coaching and his years playing, what did we decide? He had 70 years of experience, and he said he's never seen anything like this. Like, yeah, that an injury, you know, a team that's been as injury ridden as a team like Utah has, like, he's never seen anything like that. And I think that says something.
Well, that was off the fifth string quarterback conversation with Batari, and he pretty much said, nah, that's five deep. No, never seen it.
Which one of those,
they're all kind of different scenarios, but yeah, that's getting real deep into the quarterback room.
Which, by the way, better give that guy a shout out, Luke Batari. That guy had, I mean, he only passed for 61 yards, but the guy had two rushing touchdowns. And I did not know this, but so apparently his mom, and so they kept going to the screen and showing her after his touch, his two touchdowns. And, you know, she was a former, I think, swimmer for Utah. So, he grew up as a Utah fan, growing up in the Bay Area, but like kind of a cool storyline seeing him, so shout out to Luke Batari for getting that, you know, those two touchdowns. It was actually a really cool story.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good. It's a good day for him to shine. All right. While you guys were sitting around shooting the bull and having fun, I was working in Albuquerque calling a football game that ended up going, felt like about 6.5 hours long. I mean, it just seemed like every moment I got Christian Mayer like, hey, legal ID. I'm like, what? It's been another hour? Hey, another legal. It's been another hour. That game was 4.5 hours long, double overtime, tons of penalties, tons of injuries. And Utah State was able to hold on and get a double overtime victory on one of the craziest plays to end a game I have ever seen. Utah State really was just getting bullied because they lost MJ Tafisi. They lost Anthony Switzer. They lost Devin Dye in a defense that had already just been ravished with injuries. They lose multiple starters in that game, especially on the defensive line. And then New Mexico, who ran the ball for 350 yards against a pretty good Fresno State a week before, they start realizing, oh, they got nobody left on defense, and they just start running over and over and over, and Utah State can't stop them. They're up 31-21 with about 5.5 minutes left, and New Mexico scores a touchdown. Utah State can't convert. They have a third down in hands. I'm going to show you this play on Monday. Utah State converts on a pass play for third down and then could just kneel it out and win the game, but they call an offensive pass interference, and which backs them up 15. Obviously, they can't convert the third down and punt, and New Mexico is able to go down and kick the field goal to send it into OT, but really just an abysmal offensive PI call. And then they go back and forth in overtime, and Utah State holds to a field goal. And then on and then Levi Williams, the third string quarterback, fumbles the snap, picks it up and runs to the outside, gets into the end zone and wins the game on a walk-off touchdown. Look, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't anything to be overly like, it just wasn't something you like, well, that was a dominating, exciting game. It was, I think I texted you, it was one of the best, worst games I've ever seen in college football history. And it was, I mean, I'm running out of adjectives to describe it. It was just as crazy of a game as I've ever been a part of.
Well, it feels like this season has just been a wild ride altogether. And you see it culminate in this double overtime win where you're asking everything from Levi Williams, and he started and finished that game and gave you 25 carries and 160 yards.
Yep.
And three touchdowns.
Yep. And two touchdowns through the air. Should be your Mountain West Conference Offensive Player of the Week. I mean, almost 450 yards of combined offense between rushing and passing and five touchdowns. And I mean, here's a kid that it's such a great story too, because he's got another year of eligibility, and he was telling us in post game, his mom was in the military, his grandparents were in the military, and it's been his dream not to play in the NFL, but to be a Navy SEAL. That's his dream. And he's got his degree now, and he's got another year of eligibility. And he's like, I'm shutting it down. I'm going to go into the military. I'm going to enroll, and I want to be a Navy SEAL. That's what he wants to do. And he goes, look, protecting this country has always been something that I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be on the front lines and following my family's history and legacy. And that's what I'm going to do. And so he's got another year of eligibility. He's like, nope, not doing it. I'm going to go and join the military. And I just, those are the kind of guys that you just respect, and just because he could stick around and milk out maybe an MBA for free and still keep the college dream alive and still enjoy it. But he wants to get on with his life, and that's what his ultimate dream has been. And I can't give enough praise for a guy that wants to do that. That's just incredible.
We need to get that guy on this week, by the way. I think we need to have him on. That is such an amazing story. Like, I have such respect for like Pat Tillman and that, what that guy did. I mean, leaving behind all, you know, that money. And granted, Pat Tillman wasn't the greatest NFL player. My God, the guy left behind money and to go do that, to go fight for your country. And the same for here for Levi Williams, wanting to go. To leave going to school, especially in today's climate, it's not the easiest thing to do. And to see this guy, I mean, so much respect for a guy that wants to fight for our country. I mean, it gives me chills, goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah. Yes. Let's see if we can get him on. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
But Utah State gets that sixth win, so they're bowl eligible, and they good chance that they'll be bowling. A lot of people just naturally think these days, if you get that sixth win, you're going to a bowl game. There are occasions where six win teams get left out, so Utah State still on that bubble a little bit. I'm feel pretty confident that they'll be okay, but you like to get to seven. But hey, you get to six. And I tweeted this out because I get Aggie fans getting after me a little bit, like, oh, the defense stinks and you know, all this other stuff. All right. So let's just rewind this thing here a little bit when it comes to Utah State. They got wrecked in the portal. They lost 9 would-be starters in the transfer portal last year. 7 of those on the defensive side of the ball. Overall, they had to replace 40 guys on that roster. 40 guys that they had to replace on that roster for this season. A lot of JCs, a lot of freshmen, a lot of transfers that didn't see a lot of time in their other school and got thrust into the lineup. They dealt with incredible injuries. Probably one of their best linebackers they lost in the first play of the game at Iowa. They've had to play multiple quarterbacks due to injuries. And they lost their defensive coordinator a week before spring ball. So coach had to hire a new defensive coordinator who brought in a new scheme 1 week before spring ball. And they played arguably, if you look at how teams were ranked and things and where they played on the road, arguably one of the hardest schedules they've played in a long time. And yet, and they got to six wins. And I went to Utah State, and Hans, you remember when you were being recruited by Utah State in the mid-90s, that place was a dumpster fire. I mean, it was bad, bad, bad football. And when I went to school there from, you know, roughly 96 to 01, and then stayed there and worked for a few more years, I lived through the McDennehy era, the Brent Guy era, the Dave Arslanian era. That was horrible, horrible football. And for any Utah State fan, out there, to be and moan with six wins in arguably one of the most tumultuous years you've ever had this that a coaching staff has ever had to deal with, and you're still bowl eligible, you need to shut your mouth and say thank you to Blake Anderson and the staff, and thank you for trying to keep this thing together, and thank you for getting your team to a bowl game when this easily, easily could have been a 2 or 3 win season. But yet he's still able to keep it together and get to six wins. I don't care if it's a 500 season. That's a W in my book, considering what this staff had to deal with this year.
I agree with you, Scotty. Go Aggies.
Well, there was a moment there where they were 3-5, and you and Lloyd were talking about it during the show. It's like, all right, four games left. You got to find three out of the next four. And we all kind of felt like they were winnable games and they should be able to find their way through at least two, but maybe a 2-2. But they get two wins in double overtime between San Diego State and New Mexico. Two. They go to double overtime. They keep their focus and they get wins. And then they beat the crap out of Nevada. Now, the Boise State game, that's an outlier, because you're always dealing with weird quarterback stuff through the entire year, from having to start and play Levi Williams to the Lega and Hillstead rotation. And he still finds a way to get the two overtime victories and get that win against Nevada and advance to bowl eligibility. Yeah, I think they overachieved this year.
Yeah.
They absolutely do. And by the way, I agree with Scott. Came from a guy tweeted at Scotty after he quote tweeted his, you know, your tweet on this, Scott. He says, I agree with Scott no matter what Lloyd tells him in the morning after podcast. Go Aggies. So that's what that was. Blake Anderson and that staff did a hell of a job with what they were dealing with. Absolutely. Amen.
And
go Aggies.
And by the way, if they keep that team intact, and they need to add a little bit of help on the offensive line. They need to find a good pass rusher or two and a little bit of help with linebacker. They're good on the back end. Then they could be scary good next year. They could be really, really good next year. And it's funny because Anthony Switzer, who would be eligible to leave, he's graduated. He tweeted out, he tweeted out earlier today and said, I'm coming back. We're all coming back. Time to Aggie TF up. and so if you got Switzer back and Blake Anderson, look, they feel like they're more prepared this year for the transfer portal than they were last year. They've got Gary Anderson has a collective in place. They're not handing out trucks. They're not handing out big dollars, but they're handing out something now. And they feel like that they're prepared this year. They're a little bit more proactive to avoid getting decimated. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case, if they can hold on to guys like Ike Larson and Jalen Royals, but there's three players that you absolutely have to hold on to if you're Utah State. Anthony Switzer, who already today tweeted out he's coming back, Jalen Royals and Ike Larson. You keep those three dudes in place, you have a chance to be really good next year. Now, We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And there's some other complimentary players in there as well that I think are going to be very, very important. But if Utah State can hold that roster, watch out. Aggies could be pretty good next year.
Hey, as long as BYU doesn't come a knocking, they'll be just fine. They need BYU to stay away.
Look at you getting it in there. Can't. Well, never mind. I'll keep my mouth shut.
Okay.
All right. How's everybody? Everybody got big plans for today? Hans, you're still, well, no, you don't have any leftovers left. You might have to put another turkey on because everybody picked you clean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They rolled through it. And I've got a big, long travel day today. So I am going to be trying to get back into the state of Utah at some point today.
Hey, just real quick, Hans, how's that travel going? Because you had like, I don't know, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. I don't know, like from Stillwater to back to Oklahoma City. Like, now, what's your thought on your travel this year?
A lot. It's a lot. It's just weird.
It seems like a lot.
It's the worst part of the thing. I mean, the games are fun. Everything's fun. But you got to admit, the travel's the biggest pain in the butt.
Yeah, the travel for the Big 12 has been strange. Just, you know, we're in Stillwater about an hour and 20 minutes, or sorry, we are in Oklahoma City about an hour and 20 minutes outside of Stillwater because it's where the hotels are, it's where the people are, right. It's where the shops are, it's where the airport is. And so everybody kind of stays around this area and then drives on game day. But that is the norm. It feels like an hour and 20 to hour and 30 minutes is the norm for game day driving, at least in the current Big 12. I am glad that everybody's coming on board, Arizona State and Arizona, Colorado, Utah. I think that's going to help a ton, but it's been a lot, Lloyd. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I've noticed that, I was trying to think about that. Like Scotty didn't, what's the most travel you have in any in any of your games?
In
Wyoming?
In conference games, travels. I mean, that's why the Mountain West. I mean, look, the Big 12 is awesome in terms of stadiums and everything else, the vibe. But I tell you what, the Mountain West is pretty slick when it comes to travel. You know, like your worst,
yeah, it seems
your,
like it.
Your worst travel is Wyoming, and then you've got two where if you do fly in commercial, you got Colorado State and Air Force, which one's about 45 minutes to the north and one's about 45 minutes to the south, which is, you know, obviously that's not a big deal from Denver. And then after that, you fly into everywhere, UNLV, Fresno, San Diego State, you know, Albuquerque, all have good airports. So yeah, it's not that bad in terms of travel in the Mountain West. Doesn't hold a candle to, you know, West Virginia, where you got to fly into Pittsburgh, or where you go into Stillwater, you got to fly into Oklahoma City. I mean, you got some out of the way places, man.
It'll be interesting to see how Utah, I mean, because they have the same thing with the Pac-12. Travel's really easy with the Pac-12, probably the most being Wazoo, probably.
Yeah. That's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a pain in the butt. But outside of that, it's like, you know, it's easy. And having to deal with that little bit of extra travel, got to imagine that probably wears on the team a little bit.
Well, gentlemen.
So, anyways.
Enjoy your Sunday. We got to decide the future of this thing, what we're going to do, because technically this could be our last morning after.
Yeah, that is, I don't know. Judging by the downloads, I guess maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we should keep it going. If we hit a certain number, what number do we have to hit to keep it going? I don't know. You guys tell me.
Hey, let's go. Let's sky's the limit today. Let's go 100 downloads.
Okay.
We get 100. That's it.
And how about like 10 ratings and reviews too? Like,
oh, I like that.
I'd like to see some ratings and reviews. Like, at least make us. I know we don't make money on this thing. We do this because we just love to talk to each other and talk sports. But if you do like it, go rate it, leave us a review, and if we get 10 new reviews, maybe we'll extend this thing out.
Extend it out for another week, maybe.
There you go.
I like that.
Well, we probably do need to like talk bowl games and stuff, you know, next Sunday when the announcements come out. So we'll figure
it out. Scotty, let's let the ratings decide that.
Okay. All right. I'll shut up. All right. All right, guys. Have a great Sunday. Hans, safe travels back, my friend.
See you guys.
There you go. Gentlemen. It's your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This has been your Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bang. Catch more of the Hans and Scotty Show weekdays from noon to 3. And in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your podcasting platform of choice. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.